Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, May 7th, 2017. This is episode 1387. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Square. Accept every card for the same rate and deposit your money fast with free chargeback protection, no commitment, or hidden fees. Sign up now to get free processing on your first $500 in sales at square.com/tech guy. Some terms apply. And by Capterra. Capterra helps you find and compare software solutions for your business needs with over 400 software categories from accounting to workflow management. Visit capterra.com/twit to start your free search today. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and augmented reality and virtual reality and real reality. 888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can reach me. Use Skype. You know, just Skype out. And I'm here. 888-ASK-LEO. The website, if you want to keep track of stuff, you don't have to write it down for yourself. We'll write it down for you. How's that for service? And we put it all, thanks to James DeRuvo, at the website techguylabs.com. James is scribbling. Scribble, scribble, scribble. Techguylabs.com. Let's see. What else do you need to know? I think that's it. There's a chat room. You want to join us in the chat, irc.twit.tv, irc.twit.tv. That's the complete panoply of stuff. Don't let Facebook make you miserable. Out of nowhere. It's actually a New York Times article this Sunday, today, in the New York Times. Seth Stevens Davidovitz, who is an economist, the author of a book called Everybody Lies, provocative name, Big Data, New Data, and What the Internet Can Tell Us About Who We Really Are. And he wrote, I thought, was a very interesting piece. Apparently, it's official now, he says. Scholars have analyzed the data and confirmed what we already knew in our hearts. Social media is making us miserable. See, we all kind of know, right, he says, vaguely aware that everybody else can't possibly be as successful, rich, attractive, relaxed, intellectual, and joyous as they appear on Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and Twitter. The real world is not so neat. And the problem is we know how our lives are. He mentions the old AA saying, don't compare your insides with other people's outsides. And that's what we're doing, aren't we, in social media? He says, for instance, Circus Circus, which is that kind of rundown hotel in Vegas, you know, and the Bellagio, which is the fancy one. Is that the one that just had the fire? Anyway, each have the same number of people who check in, you know, the same number of people stay there. But the fancy one gets about three times as many check-ins on Facebook. Right? Mercedes and BMWs are about twice as likely. The owners of Mercedes and BMWs are about twice as likely to like their car brand on Facebook as our owners of other kinds of cars, right? I'm a BMW owner. We spend, he mentioned, six times as much of our time in life washing dishes as we do, say, playing golf. But we tweet twice as often about golfing. Nobody tweets about doing the dishes. That's obvious. But what happens is if you look at social media after a while, you start to think everybody else is leading lives of glamour and excitement, and ours are just quiet, lives of quiet desperation. So social media, irritable bowel syndrome, and migraines each affect about 10% of the American population. But I'm thinking you probably already know that there's a lot more migraine awareness, about 2.5 times the migraine awareness that there is the IBS awareness on Facebook. So what's the solution? He says, use Google. Now, this is interesting. And I kind of like this as an antidote. He says, if you feel down after you go to Facebook, you can quickly make yourself feel better. If you go to Google and if you have autocomplete turned on in your browser and you just type in a couple of words, like, for instance, if you type in I always and then see what let's try that. I'm going to try that on Google right now. Type in I always and then autocomplete will tell you I always have to pee is number one. I always feel tired is number two. This is normal. Not I'm always playing golf. I'm always staying at the Bellagio. Let me type. I always feel tired, bloated, hungry, and sick are the number. So he says this will make you feel better. Just do some Google auto completes. Rarely do you see I always on Caribbean vacations. I'm always counting my money. I always feel tired. This is good. I'm going to use this from now on. And finally, he says, as our lives increasingly move online, I propose a new self-help mantra for the 21st century. Don't compare your insides to other people's outsides with don't compare your Google searches with other people's Facebook posts. Actually, we should all start tweeting. I always feel tired and depressed after looking at Facebook. There's actually a acronym. You know, there's YOLO, you only live once. That's what you put on your acronym when you're, you know, jumping out of an airplane or water skiing or doing something crazy and fancy. But there's also FOMO, which is actually more my life. Fear of missing out, FOMO. And I tell you, you browse Instagram and it's FOMO City. You just, why am I not water skiing with Richard Branson on his private island? Why not? Why not me? FOMO. Somebody did I always and has come up with I always find the fish. Okay. Your mileage may vary because remember, autocomplete is based on something on what you search for and who you are. If you want to find out what the real world sees, you can do an incognito tab or private browsing tab in your browser and then type I always and you'll see. Makes me feel better to know everybody else feels terrible. See, that's what we really want. That's what we miss. Everybody always feels tired. If you are a Macintosh user, you should beware. I've recommended many times a program called Handbrake. It's a really useful tool for converting video technically called transcoding, from one format to another. Recommend it all the time. We use it to rip DVDs, things like that. Somehow, I don't know how, one of the Handbrake mirrors, that's a site, you know, when you download a very popular program, often you'll visit a mirror that is a site that duplicates the main site to spread the download around. One of the mirrors had a malware on it, masquerading as Handbrake. Oh dear. So if you downloaded Handbrake on a Mac between May 2nd and May 6th, inclusive, May 2nd through yesterday, May 6th, You have a 50-50 chance because there's two sites, one in a mirror, you know, the main site in a mirror, that you downloaded a Trojan horse. Oy. And we thought Macs were safe. Here's what Handbrake says on their site. There's a, I'm going to have to put this in the show notes because it's kind of complicated, but you need to open up the terminal and there's some commands. If you see a process called Activity Agent in the OS X Activity Monitor, you are infected, really. Activity underscore agent. There's some terminal commands, and you must change all the passwords that live in your OS X keychain or your browser password stores because those have been corrupted. Now, Apple is updating a behind-the-scenes thing they have called X-Protect that will be pushing out Macintoshes today that should find this and remove it. But just a little bulletin, if you downloaded Handbrake, check this out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Where in the world is Johnny Jett?
I can tell you where Johnny Jett is. He's coming up in just a little bit on the Tech Guy Show. Johnny, normally here on Saturdays, our travel guru will join us in about 10 minutes because he was busy traveling. Whoa. Coming back from Alabama. I think he was at the space camp. I'm not sure. He was in Huntsville. We'll find out. Johnny Jett coming up in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. I see Heather Hammond searching through her purse. I hope you found whatever you were seeking. Was it Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah, not there either.
Not there? Where in the world? I guess they were saying there was something about Carmen Sandiego on Saturday Night Live last night.
I haven't watched it yet.
So Dr. Mom said, here's the earworm. And I foolishly clicked. Never click links, folks.
When someone warns you ahead of time that it's an earworm.
Yeah, especially then.
Lucky me, I had actually never heard that song, and I never want to hear it again.
Oh, you too. Yeah, you and I knew about it because my kids watched it. It was very popular in the early 90s for on PBS for kids. So you and I missed it. You were probably just, 15. You were a little too old to watch that.
And luckily, childless.
And you didn't have to be. You missed the whole Barney thing and everything. Oh, man.
There's all kinds of things that make me glad of my choices.
You have been in, like a baker, you come in early, early, early in the wee hours of the morning to sprinkle flour on the phones and get the ovens heated up so that we can have, by early morning, we can have some lovely fresh baked callers, and I take it we have some today.
I wake up now, sleepily and go, time to make the donut.
I'm hungry. I mean, I just made myself. I'm hungry. Croissants.
We'll have a nice salad later.
Oh, Parker House rolls. Eclairs. Who should I talk to? Quick, get me out of this loop. Talk about an earworm.
You said eclair. That's a drool. George in Laguna Niguel has a great idea if it hasn't been invented already.
I like it. Thank you, Heather. Hello, George. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I'm working with two academic medical institutions in West Los Angeles, and they want to develop an electronic bulletin board where both of them can post updates on work that they're doing in a specific disease state. And the goal is to have both organizations begin to communicate better with each other, but also to get more people who are interested in this disease state looking at this electronic bulletin board and say, hey, I may have something to add to that.
I love that you use the phrase electronic bulletin board, because that harkens back to the Carmen Sandiego era, early 90s. Before the internet was popular, we had electronic, we called them BBSs, BBS or bulletin board systems. Do you remember that? You dial in on your modem. I ran one in the 80s, actually, for a long time. A lot of people got started in technology and telecommunications with bulletin board systems. Nowadays, I would just say make a website. I mean, you want a couple of things. You want a place the public can go to see this information, right? You want it open to the public?
No, we just want it open between the two academic institutions and the healthcare professionals.
I see. Okay. So you don't, but you do want, so you'll have some sort of authentication required for people to get in to validate that they are a healthcare professional.
Not necessarily. It's not going to be meant to be exclusive, but it's just meant to target those two so they can begin to communicate with each other.
You know, a website can totally do this. There are, you know, any decent website software can have multiple authors, so you can assign authorship privileges to the researchers that you want to contribute. Websites also support comments, and you can have commenting privileges. You can say you can't comment unless you've been approved. It sounds like that's the kind of thing you'd like to do. You can even make it not open to the public if you want, password protected. So that, I mean, that's basically, websites have completely superseded bulletin board systems because they do exactly the same thing in a much easier way.
The only drawback is what you have said before, and that is you'd have to have somebody in charge to monitor that website. And I don't think we'd be able to get that. That's why I was hoping more like a cork board. Someone could just put a post-it on something and say, I'm doing this area of research.
Well, you're going to need somebody at least in charge to the degree that somebody decides who has permission to post. Otherwise, you're in trouble.
Okay.
Yeah. So somebody, right? Somebody's got to say, okay, you can post. What I would do is I would pick the lead researchers and say, by the way, you're administrators. You can add people if you want people to comment and post or have access to it. So there are a number of ways to do this. Dr. Mom says she runs one for her medical society, and they use LinkedIn to do this. LinkedIn is a social network, business social network for professionals. And LinkedIn will help because everybody's profile on LinkedIn shows their affiliation. So you could say people affiliated with these hospitals are allowed, or people in this department are allowed, that kind of thing. That would simplify
that. That's a really good suggestion, because I'm on LinkedIn and it's wonderful. So that just might be it, because you can go in and post what you're doing and have somebody comment on it.
Exactly.
A response. That's great.
You can make a LinkedIn special space on LinkedIn. That's a group basically for this particular purpose.
Ah, then that is a good place to start.
You've got to be aware of, and she, by the way, she says you can make it a closed group. You've got to be aware of HIPAA, of course, if you're posting any patient records, confidential records. And I don't know exactly how that would work on LinkedIn. But
We weren't going to be doing anything like that. Actually, what we were just trying to get are people to be consciously aware of what's going on at one institution and the other, so we could get more people that have interest in this disease state to find out about what work is being done.
This sounds perfect.
LinkedIn, that's a great idea.
Bravo, LinkedIn, a Microsoft company. Thanks for the call. Microsoft spent a huge amount of money to acquire LinkedIn. In fact, a lot of people were a little puzzled when Microsoft bought LinkedIn because they thought, why would Microsoft want this? But now you can kind of see the value of it, can't you? And, of course, what you really get is the data about who knows whom, who's doing what. Dr. Mom tells me LinkedIn is not HIPAA compliant, so you've got to be aware of that. But it sounds like that's the perfect solution. From one doctor to another. There are BBSs apparently still around, not the kind that you dial in with your dial-up modem, but they're forums. And there's a lot of forums. We always are talking about a forum called XDA Developers, xda-developers.com, that is a forum for Android users. And it's really a great place because each Android handset, every model has its own little section where people talk about it. And within the sections are, you know, different topics around that handset. So forums are kind of have taken the place of the old BBSs. Bulletin board systems. Those were a lot of fun. I ran a Mac BBS in the early days of the Macintosh, I think 84, 85, called MacQ out of San Francisco. And it was a big deal because I had not one but two phone lines. Two. No waiting. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Where in the world? I like this. I think, should we make this your new theme? Johnny Jett is here. Traveling
like
all around the world. He wasn't here yesterday because he was in Huntsville, Alabama for the TBEX conference. Is that a travel conference?
Yeah, the Travel Bloggers Exchange. Actually, you know the owner who runs it, Rick Calvert.
Oh. Yeah, so, I do. He used to run the BloggerCon.
Exactly.
And the Podcast Expo.
Blog World, I think.
Blog World. Yeah, Blogger. Yeah, Blog and, World. Yeah, Rick Calvert. Yeah.
So he does that. And they've had 19 of them.
Wow.
And they do them all over the world. They just announced next year's is going to be in Zimbabwe.
Is it open to the public or is it just travel writers and people like you?
Travel bloggers and PR.
Fancy but, I mean, people if, like you.
No, there's a lot of people who are just starting out and they want to, you know, they want to be able to travel the world. They want to learn how. So they go and they don't charge a lot for bloggers. I think it's under $100 for the weekend.
I got a question for you from a viewer, actually from Dr. Mom. She seems like she's the only person who actually listens and interacts with the show. I know, but it's not. But she said she flew from Indiana to New York yesterday on Southwest.
Okay.
After boarding, we were told a new regulation says all laptops have to stay in the overhead bin or under your seat for the duration of the flight.
What? I had not heard that. I flew yesterday.
And you didn't see that? You were
yesterday.
On Delta yesterday? What were
no,
you?
I was on American yesterday.
And you didn't experience that?
No. That's the first I heard of it. But I will have to get on the horn and start finding out what that's all about.
That would be, you know, that's what we were talking about. Well, sort of we were talking about the travel ban for the Middle Eastern airlines. They said you had to check any electronics bigger than your phone in your check-on luggage. But right. This says you can carry it on, but you just can't use it. I guess it could
sense.
Be you just have a crabby captain on that flight. But they did say it was a regulation.
They like to joke around a lot, but...
Oh, maybe they were teasing.
I don't know. I doubt it. That doesn't sound like something they would joke about.
Yeah, that would make some people very angry. A lot of people expect to work on flights.
I mean, that's what I do the whole flight.
Yeah.
I work. That's how I pass the time. These flights used to be torture for me. Now I'm like, oh my God, we're about to land. I got to hurry up. So... It would really be a bummer if that does take an effect. And I was worried about that once they announced it for, the Middle Eastern and North Africa. And now they're talking about maybe Europe, but I haven't heard about this one.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it. But meanwhile, I know you've been working hard to get us some stuff.
Yes, I have. So I just did a post on how to find the cheapest cruises because I was at a conference a few weeks ago in New York and I met with the CEO of Cruise Compete, which is it's a really cool website and a great way to find deals. So he told me some good information. I'll tell you about his website too. So he says the best time to buy cruises are either 12 to 18 months in advance or 6 to 7 weeks before the sailing because that's just after final payments are due and a lot of people –
cancel.
Back out. Exactly. Oh. So he says that's the best time.
Just 6 to 7 weeks before sailing if you can't book a year in advance.
Yeah, 12 or 18 months. But so Cruise Compete is a free anonymous service that lets consumers compare multiple custom cruise offers from competing travel agents. So, you know, whenever you want to book a cruise, it's always best to go through a travel agent.
Now, you've told me that. Why is that? And I've been doing it because of your recommendation. But why?
Because they have deals, they can get you upgraded, they know what's going on, because if you just book online, you're not going to find the best deal normally. And also, especially for novice cruisers, you don't want to do that. But what I like about these guys is you just pick the cruise you want, they send it out to all these different travel agents, and they bid on you, and they don't know who you are. But if you like what they have, you can then contact them.
Oh, so this site is kind of like requesting a quote.
Cruise lines hate them.
I bet the cruise... But I don't understand. How can a travel agent get a better deal than another?
Because if they're sending more business to one cruise, then they're like, they get a better deal. So you got to just keep. That's a way to find other travel deals too. So let's say if you want to go to Asia or Japan. So a lot of people would say, well, then go down to the Japanese section of town if you live in a big city and go to one of those travel agents because they're sending so much business, you can usually find a better deal or go down to Chinatown if you're going to China. And things like that.
You can even narrow it down by cruises because one of the concerns I'd have on a cruise search is that some cruises are very inexpensive, but you get what you pay for like that.
Oh, no, you choose what kind line what type that of
went
you
on
want,
the rocks in Italy. I don't
date.
Want to. Okay, good. Yeah.
So
nice. What's a cruise to nowhere? Because I'm searching for that right now.
So that's. You want to do a cruise to nowhere?
What is it?
So let's say if you go from New York and you go out for a couple of days and
you come
back.
Oh, it's just, you're just on the boat floating around.
Exactly. So that's to nowhere. I've done many of those because they do a lot of media previews. So they invite
sure.
you know, media or travel agents
from around
the world. Those are usually
shorter. You just go out for
Yeah, they're two or three nights yeah. and a cruise to nowhere.
Fun. I love Most my travel agent. I'm never giving her up. But
what's her name again?
I'm not going to say it because I don't want anybody else to know.
Well, it's funny because I just got an email today from someone asking me for my business class travel agent. And my guy told me not to give his name out anymore because
he's got too much business.
He's got too much business.
I'll ask Jane. She's a travel store. And I'll ask Jane if she wants me to do any more referrals because I've mentioned her name a few times. And I imagine, you know, at some point you just have more business than you can handle.
Correct.
Yeah.
We got time for an app?
Yes, please.
Okay. So 2 weeks ago, I mentioned an app about how you can book hotels by the hour. Mm-hmm. Well, now they have one you can book hotels by the minute. And I know you get your head out of the gutter and it's hard to wrap it. But
I need
hotels
5 minutes at least. What about the
all
minute?
Luxury hotels.
So like you could take a half hour nap.
Exactly. That's what they're going
Actually,
after these
know,
business travelers, supposedly.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you take, I'll give you an example. You could take a red eye. A lot of times I'm going to do business in New York. I'm going to take a red eye, arrive at 6 in the morning. I have a 10 o'clock meeting. What am I going to do? If I could go down to the Ritz-Carlton and take an hour nap, I'd feel better.
Yeah. So this app is called Recharge.
Recharge.
It's free on iOS and Android.
Okay.
And so they go after four and five star hotels. And they started in San Francisco. So they had the Taj Campton Palace. They had the W San Francisco, the Westin SFO.
Oh, these are nice hotels. Yeah.
And then now they just – a couple weeks ago or last week, they announced they're moving into New York City, and they have 16 hotels there, including the Pier, which is really nice.
I love the Pier, yeah.
The W there as well, One Hotel Central Park. But anyway, so they charge between 83 cents a minute and $2. So if you want to have a 20-minute power nap, it's going to be $57 to $128.
What do they do after 20 minutes? They throw you out?
Well, they'll charge you. They'll keep charging you.
So
once you check, once you check out and you don't check out and the maid goes into the room, then you get charged.
That could be expensive.
For sure. A 60-minute snooze and shower or whatever you're going to do is $85 to $270.
Nice.
$207. So these business travelers who have, you know, big expense accounts, this is nothing to them.
Yeah.
And they just don't want to expense the whole night, which is, you know, could be $1,000. And they're only going to take a shower or whatever they're going to do. But, you know, when you hear hotel by the minute, you're like.
They have one of my favorite San Francisco hotels on here, the Stanford Court. I love the Stanford Court. That's nice. I think that's handy.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. Well, hotels, you know, they've got those rooms. Any time a room is vacant.
Right.
And it says they probably are most of the day. You know, they're not making any money. So I think that's actually a good idea.
Yeah, so you're charged a $250 overstay fee if the housekeeping arrives and you're still in the room.
Whoa, wait. Oh.
So you got to make sure you're out. But so they're going out through these hotels. Let's say it's a 250 room property.
Yeah.
Well, they could sell out. They could sell 275 rooms doing this way.
And this way, they don't have a lot of people sleeping in the lobby, which I think is probably – or at the airport. Airports hate you to sleep at the airport. And they some airports are so hostile to anybody getting comfortable. Johnny Jett, you'll find him at johnnyjett.com. That's where his cruise article is. Also, his travel newsletters that are free to subscribe to and often have amazing deals. Follow him on Twitter at Johnny Jett and on Instagram, same handle. You had some great pictures from Huntsville on your Instagram feed. Thanks, Johnny. We'll talk again next week.
Take care.
Our show today brought to you by Square. Oh, speaking of cool things you can plug into the headphone port, I remember when Square came out and you could get the little Square dongle that plugged into the audio jack and you could suddenly take credit cards. I had no need for it, but I immediately sent for it and set up a Square account. And I was going around saying, hey, pay me a buck. give me your credit card. This is the coolest thing ever. They still offer that, but of course now they've gotten even more sophisticated. They have, because of chip and PIN, Square has a new way of doing it with a touch to pay kind of thing. If you go to square.com/techguy, you can see all the stuff that Square offers these days, including that great point of sale system. I was just at a coffee shop. And actually, it was a lunch place, noon lunch place that opened in Petaluma. And they have this. It's so cool. You pair you set up your iPad with the new Square chip and PIN reader. You can dip, swipe, or tap on the reader, and you've got a complete point-of-sale system. And the beauty of this is Square's super affordable. One flat rate. There's the original. Remember that one? They still make, you can still get that for free. One flat rate for all credit cards, 2.75% per swipe, dip, or tap. That is a very fair price. Then you don't have to set up a merchant account. You're good to go. If you do more business, they'll have custom pricing. You can do keyed-in transactions as well. You don't have to worry about hidden fees or penalties or long-term commitments because Square is great. You just pay for what you use, which is why I could do this. Didn't cost me anything to have the Square Reader. And they've even got your back with up to $250 a month in free chargeback protection for qualifying chargers. There's a PC or iOS app that you can check your sales on the dashboard there. Square's awesome. Sign up in minutes right now, square.com/tech guy. And if you do that now, you'll get free processing on your first $500 in sales. Square.com/tech guy. Some terms apply. Square.com/tech guy. I love Square. Let me thank them for their support and for what a great product. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Julie in Little Rock, California.
Hello?
Is there a Little Rock in California?
Yes, there is. It's Little Rock. It's spelled one word.
Huh.
And it's right on the Palmville city limits. We're just, you know, Highway 138. People go through here on their way to Vegas.
I know exactly. Yeah. I've probably been through it.
More than likely.
What can I do for you?
Well, don't laugh, okay? I have a Galaxy S3.
You know who else has a Galaxy S3, we think? President Trump. That's the phone he tweets with.
Oh, dear. Okay.
I'm not, you know, you're in good company.
Okay, there we go. Yeah. I'm just a holdout.
Apparently so is he.
Yeah,
he could afford any phone, but you know what? That was a great phone. I completely understand. I mean, we're now at the Galaxy S8, so that's five galaxies ago. But but that was a good one. I remember the S3, the S4, and S5. I thought were a little disappointing. I liked the S6. The S7 was nice. The S8's the new one. I like it a lot.
Uh huh.
What's going on with your? I'll tell you the one problem with having that old of a phone. Is you can't get it past Android KitKat, Android 4. And that means you're missing out on some new features and some security protections.
I don't understand any of that.
Okay.
But on the 4th, a few days ago, all of a sudden I stopped receiving my emails on my phone.
That's too bad.
And I don't know if there's anything that can be done about that.
You're using the built-in email app, the Samsung email app?
I would think so.
Yeah. And who is your email provider? Is it your internet service provider or Google? Where does your email live?
Oh, you mean when it's at home?
Yeah.
I have, what is it, Spectrum.
Ah, so it's your internet service provider, Spectrum Cable.
Yes.
Okay. So, and you've been getting mail even after, I presume that you became Spectrum after Time Warner sold you. And
yes.
You went through that tradition just fine. I think Time Warner used to use Yahoo. Let me see who Spectrum uses for their email. A lot of big ISPs don't do their own email. They use somebody. You know,
I use Hotmail.
Okay, there you go. They use Hotmail. Well, that might explain it. Hotmail is a Microsoft service, and they've replaced it with Outlook Mail. And I'm wondering if the settings that worked so long for you might have finally worn off. You know, they stopped using those settings.
So,
when you first set up your phone, you may not even remember this, it was so long ago, you put in the settings for your email. Probably all you had to do was say, I have Hotmail and log in, and then that would all be handled. I would do that again. So Hotmail does not, you know, stores your mail. That's the good news. You don't have to worry about if you mess it up on the phone, you're not getting email. It's still going to Hotmail. In fact, you could on your desktop computer log into Hotmail and see your mail there. Have you done that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's still working fine.
Good.
I'm on the road all the time. And
yeah, no, you need it in your phone. Yes, of course. So what I would do is go into the settings on the phone and delete that account, the Hotmail account, and recreate it. And the reason I tell you that you don't have to worry about losing mail, that it's stored on Hotmail, is in case you're worried, well, if I delete it, am I going to delete everything on my phone? You will not. Okay. I mean, you will, but it'll come right back because it's still stored
on
Hotmail.
It'll come back, yeah.
So why don't you try that?
So just go into settings.
Yeah, it's in the – I don't remember where they put it in the old versions of Android, but it'll be in probably in an accounts section of settings. There is currently, anyway, an accounts setting. And when you look at accounts, you'll see a list of all the accounts, and one of them will be a Hotmail account, or it might be a Microsoft account, but it probably will be a Hotmail account. And just you could just click on it and delete it, you know, just get rid of it.
Okay, so I have Google, I have Microsoft Exchange Active S.
Yeah.
And it says add account. So I don't even...
So you only have two accounts, Google and Microsoft. The Microsoft is the one that you need to delete. Is this a corporate Exchange account, or is this just your... This is just your Spectrum account?
Just my Spectrum.
Okay. And you know your Hotmail login, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's the one thing I should have warned you. Don't do this if you don't know your Hotmail. So select the Exchange, and then there's a little menu up in the corner with three dots. You click on that, and remove account will be one of the choices, and you can just remove that account. You can also, actually, if you want to dig deeper and see if there's something going on, tap the Exchange entry and just make sure that it's selected that mail will be synced and all of that, because maybe that got switched.
That's what it says. When I went to that, I went to the Exchange,
okay,
and my email address shows up, my Hotmail
Good.
Account, and it says sync turned off.
Oh, it's turned off. Well, there you go. Turn it on again.
I don't even know what that is.
Sync is getting the mail. Now, okay. it might be like a circuit breaker. That if you turn it on and then you check and it goes off again because something's wrong there. In that case, you could just delete it and reiterate. But it doesn't sound like you have to. Just turn sync back on. That's getting the mail. So that, just so you, for your deeper understanding, the way this works is Exchange is a mail server and it has all your mail. It doesn't delete any mail. It just sits there on the server. And the sync means that you have a view of that mail on your phone, and it's synchronizing so that your view matches on the phone what's on the server. And if it hasn't been doing that, then it'll look like you don't have any new mail because it hasn't synced. So turn it back on.
Okay. I don't know why it went off.
Well, I don't know either. And that's the one concern, is that maybe it went off because settings changed or whatever, in which case you might have to start over. But try turning it on and see if it fixes it.
That happens here.
Yeah, and if it doesn't stay on, then I would say delete the account and start over. All right.
Very good.
Thanks for the call. It's great to talk to you. My pleasure. That's what we're here for. A minute left, but we can at least start talking to Doug in Murrieta, California. Hello, Doug.
Hi, Leo. I'm hoping you can help me. I spent much of the morning trying to find a good contact manager to use with my MacBook and iPhone.
Do you not like the Apple Contact Manager?
Well, no. What I'm looking for is something that I can import, merge, delete, edit all my contacts. I've got over 500 contacts.
Yeah, cleaning them up is... Yeah. So there are a number of programs you can install that will, merge your contacts. But my favorite contact manager on both the Mac and iOS is called a Busy Contacts. It comes from a company called Busy Mac at busymac.com. And it's not free, but there's a free trial, and it's a very nice contact manager. And it will do things like merge contacts, clean up contacts. It also pulls in contacts from social media, too, so it can really help you keep your contacts up to date. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Or Canada. Skype me if you're not in those areas. It'll work. Skype out. You have to Skype out to a phone number, though. 888-827-5536. Continuing on with Eric in Hutchinson, Kansas. Hi, Eric.
Hey, Leo. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you great. Thanks for calling.
All right. I'm wanting to know if this Chrome OS, the Chrome recovery thing that you can download into Chromebook, or your Chrome browser, and take an old PC and take a USB.
No. I wish. You want to put Chrome OS on an old PC.
And what about these are older Dells. What we're wanting to do, a friend of mine, he's going out of, he's retiring, he's going out of business. He's got 10 older Dells. They were running XP, and he wants to hook them up with just, you know, that was his idea. Was just,
yeah, I love that idea. So let me explain what you can do and what you might want to try. I mean, we've often said take old PCs that don't, you know, aren't secure anymore. They run old versions of Windows. They're slow and beat up, and they don't have a lot of memory. You know, only 2 gigs of RAM, for instance. Only 2 gigs, man. There was a time when that would have been wow. Only two gigs of RAM, and we often tell people put Linux on it. There are versions of Linux designed for older computers. Lubuntu, lubuntu.org, I think. Xubuntu also is a lightweight version of Linux, the free and open operating system. And in fact, Chrome OS is a version of Linux. It's the Linux kernel, but Google modified it considerably, so the only thing you can do with it is run the Chrome browser. And the theory is, well, we can keep it more secure that way. And the Chrome browser has extensions that will allow you to do many of the things you do on a desktop computer anyway. And then of late, newer versions of Chromebooks can even run the Android store, the Play Store, and add Android apps, which makes it really, you know, pretty powerful. However, Chrome is not set up for you to install on just any old computer. Unlike Linux, you really can't do that very easily, not without a lot of help. You have to modify the distribution considerably, partly because of its security. Chrome OS, for instance, on a Chromebook, on a device designed for Chrome OS, will not start up if the operating system or the boot sectors have been modified. It will check and say, no, this isn't, you know, you're going to have to power wash it and start over. So you can't just download the Chrome recovery, use the Chrome recovery tool and download a USB key of the Chrome OS. In fact, that's specific for the computer you download it for, and it won't work anywhere else. Now, having said that, people have managed to do it, and you can certainly search for people who have figured out how to take Chromium OS, which is the open source, freely downloadable version of Chrome OS, and put it on computers. And there is a company that does this, that specifically what your friend wants to do, called Cloud Ready. Actually, the company's called Neverware. It's Neverware, WARE.com. And Cloud Ready is basically Chrome OS designed to put on older computers and laptops. So it's free for personal use. There's a trial for education and business, but sounds like your friend would just be able to use the regular download. I note that they don't say Chrome OS anymore. They used to say, you know, this is Chromium OS. I would guess Google said, hey, you can't call it Chrome OS, but it is, okay? And it's free, and you do what you thought you did, which is download. Now, I have to, you know, download a little file, put it on a USB key, and install it. But read carefully, because it won't install on all computers. You want to make sure it'll work on those computers. Apparently, it will work on some Macs. It will work on some PCs, not all PCs. There are system requirements in there. Chrome OS does run quite well in a smaller amount of memory. This would be an excellent choice. I wish Google had made this a little easier to do. For some reason, they didn't really make it easy to install Chrome OS, or as easy as Linux is to install on other systems. So neverware.com, check out the free download. I've tried it even on machines that they claim work. Like I really have tried it on a number of older Macintoshes and was not able to do that. But that was almost a year ago. So I'll have to try it now. They do have, for older computers and netbooks, a 32-bit version and a list of certified models that it will run on. So you might want to check that certified model finder. They say 200 different computer models, old laptops and so forth. And you have to have 2 gigs or more of RAM. And don't expect to do the Android store, the Play store. That won't work. But this is, I think the idea here is a lot of schools and even businesses might want to take old stuff and revitalize it by putting Chrome OS on it. And I think that's a great idea. I wish Google made it easier. Rick in Barstow, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rick.
Yeah, Leo, I'm trying to locate a phone.
Okay.
A cell phone.
Okay.
And what the, really, it's sort of a legal thing is I'm trying to, I think I have a friend who's being held sort of incommunicado by family, but they're keeping the phone plugged in.
So he, you know his phone, he has a phone, but you
it
don't
have use of the phone, but I wanted, and occasionally I get a message, but that's all.
Interesting.
And what I'm trying to do is locate
what kind of phone, what kind of phone is it?
It's an Android.
Okay. So there is,
I'm just trying to get a rough location so I could ask local PD to do a welfare check.
Yeah, the local PD can do that. Individuals can't, but the local PD can go to the cell phone provider and without a warrant, by the way, this is called something called a pen warrant that isn't doesn't require judge's approval. They can just go. In fact, all the cell phone carriers have portals for local law enforcement and federal law enforcement, for that matter, to go to. They charge $1.50 or some small amount of money, and they can say, where is this phone now or where was this phone on certain dates? So you can't, but I think you have to be law enforcement to do that. If your friend had find, you know, my iPhone and an iPhone, or if there, he had Android device manager on his Android device, then, and you were able to log into his account, then you could do it. But you can't just, you know, having not set that up ahead of time. Actually, Android has a new thing, which I really like. In fact, everybody should turn this on. In case, you know, they want loved ones to keep track of them, or in case they go missing, there's a new friends feature on Google's Android operating system. I'm trying to find it on my phone because I have it installed. And I just don't remember the name off the top of my head, but it's basically like a contact. I think it's called Trusted Contact, something like that. And but again, this would have required him to put it on before he went missing, unfortunately.
Right.
So it sounds like you have good cause to go to local law enforcement and do, as you say, do a welfare check.
But I don't even know which city.
They will find that. What you would want to know is which carrier his phone is on.
That I do know.
Okay.
It's a Sprint, so I'd be able to.
If you know his phone number, that's all you really need. And you could say, you know, my friend is missing. I have reason to think, you know, something's going on. Would you please, do a welfare check? And they can go to the carrier and say, here's the phone number. Where is he? And it would be more than, it would be, frankly, more than just what city. It would narrow it down to which cell tower he's on and maybe even which GPS coordinates. It might give him an exact location. The program everybody should take a look at from Google for ahead of time is called Trusted Contacts. And there's also Android Device Manager. That's a good one, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. So just to be clear about the two different apps. So the Trusted Contacts app is a newer app from Google that lets you tell, that's next of kin, request your location. That's actually a really good idea. It's very much like Find My Friends on the iPhone. You have to agree to it. It's really more for emergencies than Find My Friends is. The idea is I'm going to, for instance, share this with my wife, obviously, and my family, but also maybe with my studio manager, John. So if I haven't shown up for the radio show, he can ping me and say, where the hell are you? And it will give him my last known location. And if I'm in a ditch, then he can send rescue equipment my way. So that's trusted contacts. There's also the Android device manager, which comes, I think, now with all Android phones. If it doesn't, both of these are free downloads from Google in the Play Store. Android device manager is like Find My Phone. It's for you, not for other people. It's if your phone goes missing, not you go missing. So you use it to say, where's my phone? Where did I leave my phone? Very, very handy to have both, I think, and probably worth setting up. 80 before your friends go missing. 8888 Ask Leo. Michelle is on the line from Simi Valley. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I am stuck. I have a Lenovo. It's a gaming computer. It's a 23049.
Okay.
And when I got it in like March of 2014, it had Windows 8, and then I was strong-armed into accepting the Windows 10 upgrade.
Yes. Thank you, Microsoft. Yeah. Actually, for gaming, that might be worthwhile. You know, that might be a good thing.
No, it's a terrible thing because in like the last 6 months, Microsoft decides that it's going to install updates on my computer, and it doesn't give me a vote because obviously Bill Gates thinks he's smarter than me.
Once you've accepted the Windows 10 upgrade, of course it's in the fine print, but one of the conditions of it is you have to then accept all the updates. You can defer them for, I think, a month, but you have to eventually do that. And that really is for the general health of the internet. People who are on computers that are not secure not only risk themselves, but they risk the internet.
Right. Well, it does this thing with Windows Defender, and it shuts off my Norton utilities.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to save you a lot of trouble. Hello. Michelle, get rid of Norton Utilities now. Uninstall that junk. That is not useful to you. It's not helpful to you. It's not saving you from anything. And in fact, many antiviruses open up insecurities on your system, including Norton Utilities. Uninstall that. In fact, you will have to go to the Norton Utilities website and get a special uninstaller because it doesn't uninstall completely. Windows Defender is what you want. That's fine. Norton Utilities is the problem, not Windows Defender.
Well, when it does the update, it updates all of that. It makes my computer run so slow, I can't even game on it.
Norton Utilities is making your computer run slow. Trust me. Do not run security software on your Windows 10 PC. You've got good security software. Security software doesn't help you. It causes problems. Please, what game do you play?
Warcraft.
Say again?
World of Warcraft.
Oh, okay. You're a WoWer.
I am.
Yeah, WoW's not super demanding. Your computer should not be slow running WoW. I'm almost certain it's Norton. That is such a piece of junk. It slows down your computer. Get rid of it. GRO.
Okay, except now... So it did an update, and I was in the middle of doing a WebEx, and my touchscreen wouldn't work, and my mouse wouldn't work, and I rebooted the machine. And
do you not believe me? Do you not believe me when I say that Norton is the problem?
I believe you, but I'm getting to my second problem.
No, that's the same problem.
I can't even, it won't reboot. It says that the boot log files are not.
Oh,
there.
Boy. Yeah, okay. I don't know why you installed that piece of junk called Norton.
Because my dad told me to.
Yeah, well, your dad, you know what? In the old days, these were good things. Antiviruses were necessary. They are no longer useful and, in fact, problematic. And Norton's always been one of the worst. And by the way, notorious for slowing your machine down. I don't know if it's related to why you can't boot. If you can get into safe mode.
So choose an option. Continue, exit, and continue to Windows 10, but it puts me in this loop where it won't ever come in. Use a device, troubleshoot, or turn it off. And I tried to do a system restore to where to work, and it didn't.
No. You may at some point have to do a recovery. The good news is Windows 10 has lovely recovery utilities that will let you get back up and running. The first thing, though, to do is to try running in safe mode. So hold down the shift key or the F8 key, both will work, and get that startup menu. You got to reboot or turn it off and start up holding down the shift and F, or just do the shift. A modern computer is the shift key, until you see the boot menu. It's just white characters and a black screen, and do a safe mode with network. And that should get you running. At that point, you've got to remove Norton Utilities.
Okay.
And you've got to remove that.
And get an uninstall key from them.
No, it's not even a key. You can do the initial uninstall from the programs and features control panel to remove programs, but it won't do everything. Once you do that, then you can go online, and Norton offers a Norton remove tool because it... Most antiviruses make it hard to uninstall because they don't want the bad guys to do it. So you got to download this Norton remove tool, and then you can remove the rest of it. It's
okay.
And then never ever let Norton darken your door again.
Okay. So, theoretically, Windows Defender is supposed to be...
Defender's fine. Yeah. The truth is, no antivirus is very useful these days because these things spread so fast, the antiviruses are completely helpless. And what it does do is, besides interfering with your own security, and it gives you a peace of mind that you shouldn't have, it makes you feel invulnerable. And it isn't. It's not protecting you in any way. And then there's this larger issue, which is that antiviruses and security software hook into the operating system very deeply. They have to do their job. And as a result, they are a vector themselves for viruses. And ironically, they are making your system less secure, not more secure. So this is true of Norton in spades, but there are many others that have similar problems. this is new. This, your dad is not to be blamed. That was the advice for years, get an antivirus. I said it over and over, but it's not true anymore. And the good news is Microsoft has somewhat solved this by putting pretty good security on Windows. The most important thing you can do is keep Windows and anything that goes online updated, including World of Warcraft, your browsers, your browser plugins. And then just don't open email attachments. Don't click on links. Just, only get stuff you want. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Capterra. Ooh, I am very excited to have this as a new sponsor. Capterra solves a problem that I, frankly, a question that I get all the time, which is, Leo, what's the best? And then, medical management software, or what's the best, online accounting system, or what's the best? And a lot of times, especially with business software, I can tell you one or two, but I don't necessarily know what the best is. Now I can send you to Capterra, Capterra. This is a totally free directory of software solutions for businesses. They have 400 plus categories, so that everything you could want. And it's a really easy system to use. It's free, but it's got reviews in here, and these are verified reviews from real users, so you could trust it. Let's see. Here's one I get all the time, church software, church management software products. So I click that category, and you see there's a bunch of them. But then look on the right here. I can say, I only want to see 4 stars or better. I only want to see the best rated products. And do I need attendance tracking? Yes. Do I need calendar management? Yes. Child check-in. Let's say I need that. You can say what features you want, narrow it down, and then compare the resulting products. How about that? And you can even put them all together in a comparison chart. Just click Add to Compare for the ones you want, and then compare them side by side. It couldn't be easier. If you want to find software for your business with specific features, if you want to see verified reviews, Capterra is the place. It's absolutely free. You don't have to, normally, I guess what people would do and what I would do is you Google it, but that's no way to find software. You have to go through all the search engine results. You have no idea, if you're finding everything. You don't get the reviews. Capterra is a great solution. Find the software you need from Capterra and get back to business. Website, I mean, just look at the categories. Website building, customer service, project management, medical practice, membership management. You know one thing I hate doing? Performance appraisals. Here's the software to help you. Capterra, CAPTERRA.com. All the reviews are verified users. They don't, they're very careful about making sure the reviews are accurate. There's 200,000 plus ratings and reviews on the site now. In every category you can think of, app development, business continuity, content marketing, file sharing, human resources, web analytics, 30,000 software solutions, 400 categories, hundreds of thousands of reviews and ratings. It's Capterra, CAPTERRA.com/twit. Do what you do better and join the millions who use Capterra every month to find software solutions to help them do their jobs. Capterra.com/twit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and it's time once again to visit the photo lab of Mr. Chris Marquardt. He is our favorite digital photographer, also film photographer, an expert, gives great workshops all around the world. In fact, I think you're off. Are you going off to a workshop next week?
Well, it's a tour. We'll go up to Svalbard, to the island up in the north, to be on a ship for 10, 11 nights and wow. chase whales and things.
Oh, what fun!
Not. I mean, with cameras. So
yes, of course.
It's gonna be all right.
That sounds like so much fun. Is it freezing?
It is probably coldish. Yeah, it's definitely below zero.
And you're not gonna have a lot of dark nighttime, right? If you're going up in the summertime.
Oh, it'll be day all round.
It's day all round. Yeah. Wow, that is so strange. For those of us who are not used to it,
that's my second time. I'm getting the sun at all times of day. So
we were
get used to that.
Yeah, we were in St. Petersburg in the a couple of years ago during July, and it's not not day long sun, but it goes dips beneath the horizon for a couple of hours, from 10 to midnight.
But it doesn't really go dark, right?
But it doesn't get dark, and then it's morning.
Yeah.
It's very strange. Well, good. I bet the light's very interesting in places like Svalbard.
I hope so. Yeah, I think it is. I mean, it's probably a bit early in the year. It's probably even a bit more interesting because it dips down lower. But then it's so much colder. So we kind of chose that place in between the seasons when it's kind of starting to become a bit more.
And I hear there's polar bears up there.
Terrible up there. Svalbard is, I've heard it being referred to as the Galapagos of the Arctic. So there's lots of wildlife. There are polar bears, there are whales, there are all sorts of Arctic foxes and lots of different things. So this is definitely going to be interesting.
Do you get to go to the seed vault that's up there?
It is up there, but no, we're not going to visit that. There's also another place I wish I could visit. Have you heard of Pyramiden?
No, what's that?
There's an old Russian mining town that is still up there.
Oh, you're going to have fun.
So maybe next time.
You're going by, I see you can go by snowmobile.
You can, yes.
Or by plane, I guess. All right. Well, I'm sure
we'll be on a 100-year-old two-mast schooner going around Svalbard. Yep.
That'll be fun. I hope you get the one of the upper cabins. So every week, Chris joins us to help us with our photography. In fact, we're going to record ahead so that while he's in Svalbard, we still have some photography tips. What is your subject of the week?
Well, I've been thinking about light. Guess why? Dealing with lots of it in just a few days. So light, just a brief reminder of what light is, why it's important for photography. It is the most important thing for photography. That's photography, even the word comes from writing with light. That's what the translation is for photography. And there are just a few things. Whenever you look around, those light sources have different properties, and I just want to briefly talk about them. First, direction. Light always comes from some direction. And that is important if you want to look for nice portrait light, for example. Is that going to shine in that person's face, or is the person's face going to be in the dark? So the direction is important. The second is, of course, how strong it is, the intensity of the light. So you can have bright light or dark light. And the third one that is very important is the size of the light source. If you have a point light source like a flashlight, or if it's a big, big surface that is lit, like, I don't know, a cloud cover, for example, that's a big light source. That's a huge light source. And last but not least, the color of the light.
That's what's interesting where you're going, because it's the land of the midnight sun. It's very different. It's kind of
it will be different.
Twilight,
yeah, the light,
all night.
Well, let's hope for that. I mean, yeah. I haven't really checked exactly how high the sun is going to be above the horizon, but it will be somewhere, well, in the lower range probably. And the color of the sunlight changes depending on how high it's above the horizon.
Norway has weird light anyway. I mean, it's just
that far
north. The light is very different. Well, you've been in Iceland too. It's probably very similar. But then this kind of twilight. You have the magic hour. That's what they call, right? The hour before sunset. You have the magic hour all night.
it's the golden hour, and the reason it is that because the sun has to travel through so much of the atmosphere when it's low in the sky that it will lose a lot of its blue light. So all that kind of comes through is the yellow and the red tones, the warm tones that give sort of a magic look to everything. Mm. And if you combine that with the direction, which is also very low, so you have that light source coming in very low that gives interesting shadows. It's very different from when the sun is high up. And that in combination is definitely going to make for interesting light.
We were told for
Looking
years.
Looking forward to that.
I remember, and this goes back to my days with a Kodak Instamatic camera, that you should position the people you're taking pictures of on away from the sun. The sun should be behind you and you're shooting away.
Yeah.
That's not true anymore, though, is it?
Not true anymore.
No.
I mean, it used to be kind of important because you had to use every little bit of light you had in order to get the right exposure. Nowadays, where cameras are quite a bit more capable in the lower light, I tend to actually place the sun behind things a lot because that will end up giving beautiful lights around over the shoulders of people and on the hair. So you have these rim lights that will give a great separation from the background.
And I always like a side light. You know, I mean, that's always gorgeous. You see that in portraiture a lot. You'll seat people indoors next to the window so that they're lit from the side.
But that's a huge light source. Now, if you make this a point light source, then you might have this big triangular shadow of your nose in the face,
which doesn't
look that nice. So bigger light sources from the side, beautiful, beautiful.
Right.
Window light is probably one of the most beautiful lights you can use when you take pictures of people.
I agree. Well, you're going to have a good time.
And you can turn them around in front of the window too. So you don't have to have the window right behind that person. You can turn yourself and that person around so you are in front of the window and then the person gets more direct light or more from the side. So that's a real beautiful way to vary the direction of the light and to give you kind of different options there.
Can we follow you? It sounds like if you're on a 100-year-old schooner, you're not going to have the internet.
No, there's no internet to speak of up there. It's literally the end of the world. It is the coverage maybe in Longyearbyen, which is one of the, I think that's not even how you pronounce it, one of the places up there that we start off there. There will probably be some Wi-Fi in hotels up there. But as soon as we're on the ship, I'll be off the grid for like 11 nights.
Wow. Well, we'll wait till you get back in June. And we will then, I'm sure, have lots of pictures at Chris's website. You could start at Discover the Top Floor. That's where he puts all of his workshops. And, man, this is one I would love to do. I really would. Are you going to – well, this is – maybe you'll do it again next year if this goes well, yeah?
Yeah, well, we'll see. I'm looking into that,
Yeah. You got to wait and see. But he goes to all sorts of great places, Nepal, all over the world. He was remember Lake Baikal at Baikal in Siberia just a couple of months
ago. Next year we'll go to Morocco and
Morocco would be fun.
Some other beautiful places.
Yeah. And of course Chris and Monica would teach you how to take pictures while you're visiting these beautiful places. That'd be the best thing in the world. What a great vacation. I'm giving you a big plug here. DiscovertheTopFloor.com. You'll find his books there, his film book, his online stuff, his Lightroom How to Get Your Workflow Going in Lightroom is a must read for anybody who's aspiring to be a good photographer. And we're going to miss you, but I'll see you in a month. Have a great time on your schooner.
Thank you.
Wow. Chris Marquardt, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the mysterious tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number if you want to talk high tech. Let's go to Karen in Little Rock, California. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I am an older teacher, and we're
Thank you for start. Your service. Seriously. Teachers are one of the most important jobs in the country.
Well, I hope so, and I'm trying to move my kids into the 21st century, so I have Chromebooks in my classroom.
Good.
And Google Classroom.
What grade do you teach?
Pardon me?
What grade?
Sixth grade.
Perfect. Perfect.
And so our district is now, I'm going to the middle school next year because they're moving the sixth graders up to the middle school. So I'm going to go to middle school, and they're introducing Promethean boards.
I don't know what that is. Promethean boards.
Yeah, it's like the step up from smart boards.
Oh, neat.
And so I was wondering if, the compatibility with smart boards. I have a lot of smart board lessons. Like, I'm not very techy, but I have had to jump into the 21st century my kids.
You can almost consider this, it's, you know, of course, we started, and if you've been doing this 25 years, you started with overhead projectors, right?
Yes, and chalkboards. I had chalk.
Of course, chalkboards.
Yellow chalk on my
every
day.
But imagine, with an overhead projector, you'd have a slide, and you could write on the slide.
Yes.
So imagine that instead of writing on the slide on an overhead projector, you're writing on the board itself where it's being projected. It's kind
That's
of like
exactly
that.
That's exactly what I do with my smart board. And then when I pull up my Chromebooks for my kids and they get on their Google Classroom, I can actually slide over from my computer to my smart board what they need to be working on. And they can go into their workspace and check it and stuff. So I was wondering the compatibility with Promethean boards with that kind of concept.
Interesting question. I'm looking right now. Promethean is new to me. I have worked with many of these boards in the past. In fact, Google now makes one that is designed to work exactly as you imagine that with a Chromebook.
Right.
It's $7,000.
Okay.
So we won't be getting that. I don't, you know, the way Microsoft Surface Hub, they have a similar one. The Surface Hub works is it's Windows. So it's basically a big screen computer.
Yes. My whole smart board is a Windows big screen computer.
All right. So that's what Promethean's doing as well. They have a computer driving it. So that means, let me think about this. That means, so you've got kids on Chromebooks and you've got a Windows machine. The one thing you could do, I don't know how well this would work. Chromebooks can use Google's Chromecast to take what's on a Chromebook and put it on the big screen.
Yes.
If it's a TV, and I bet you they can do that with a Windows PC as well. Or if not, you could kind of switch out of the Windows into a TV mode. Can you watch TV on your Promethean?
I can go to YouTube and things like that, but I'm not on the Promethean yet. I'm on the smart board.
Oh, what you have. I get it. Yeah, I don't know what Promethean does. It's different.
I don't either.
Yeah.
My thing is, I just want to make sure that I can communicate with that. I would think I could communicate with that Promethean board.
Yeah, I wouldn't assume.
I can move all my YouTube stuff because I show a lot of videos.
This, you know, and this is what happens, unfortunately. A lot of these things are very proprietary. They lock you in, and I'm not crazy about that. I'm looking
at another form where I can have them go into their Google Doc and type questions, and then they just submit it to my computer.
Yeah, so they have Promethean has a proprietary system they call ClassFlow, which comes from a laptop and can be put up, or a tablet, it looks like, and can then be put up on the screen.
So like an iPad.
Yeah, my guess is it would have to have an iPad or Windows or maybe Macintosh, and it probably wouldn't. Well, wait a minute. Now, yeah, see, they have a plug-in for PowerPoint. Yeah, this worries me. Cool. That's cool, but you don't have PowerPoint on Chromebooks, do you?
Not really. Wait a minute.
Good news.
I haven't.
Good news. Maybe good news. They have an app for Android, ClassFlow for Android.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that what this might indicate is that they are at least if you had a Chromebook that supported the Android store, though you probably don't. Those are brand new ones.
Yeah, we don't.
Yeah.
And I'm restricted with my school district. They only allow us to do like 30 things.
Well, they've bought into a somewhat proprietary system, unfortunately. I mean, the way they open the system up, Promethean has plugins for PowerPoint, for iPads, and for Android tablets. But it sounds like it's, you know, the real question to ask Promethean, and I don't see this on their website, is do you support a Chrome browser plugin? If they did, then you'd be good. Then you'd have at least whatever functionality they put in that plugin on a Chromebook.
Absolutely, yes.
And that would be nice.
That would be nice.
Boz says his kids at school had Promethean. He's in our chat room a few years back, and the teachers used MacBooks. So it would work with a Mac or Windows computer. It would work with an iPad or an Android tablet or phone. But you've got Chromebooks, and you would really like it to work with Chromebooks. So
I would like it to work with Chromebooks.
I think this is one for a call for Promethean. And, you know, I don't see a Google Chrome extension, but that wouldn't be hard for them to develop. And I think given how many schools are using Chromebooks now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah, this might be a really good idea for Promethean to offer, and maybe they're even working on it. And they just—I'm just looking through the Chrome Web Store. Oh, yes.
Maybe
good.
You and I could kind of.
Good. Look at this. So, I don't know how complete this is going to be. It's Promethean.
Well, you and I need to pitch it then.
Yes, let's pitch it to them. Let's say, hey, Promethean, they do offer active board tools for Chromebook. But it looks like, look what it says. Active Manager allows Chromebook users to list and calibrate any compatible active board or active panel they've attached via USB. That's not for teaching. That's for the IT guy.
Yeah, not.
That's not going to help you. Let me just, I'm looking through the Google Store. It doesn't look like Promethean supports it at this point. That's got to be something that they've already written a admin tool for Google Chrome.
Okay, yes,
so
they have.
At least they know what they're up to there. Maybe we got to push them in that direction. And they've got to be thinking about that because so many schools now, you can't afford a MacBook, you know, for every student. You can't afford a Windows machine for every student, but you could afford a Chromebook. For at least some
and
of the
that's
students.
That's what they're doing at my school. They're going to actually give every child at our school, which is like 1,100 kids, a Chromebook.
You're going to do a one-to-one program. That is such a testament to the power of what Google has done.
Well, and that's why I had to join the 21st century, whether I liked it or not, because I have to prepare my kids. That's, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think about it. 25 years... You probably have each year how many students? 30 each year?
30, 35, yeah.
That's a lot of kids you've already influenced. 7,500 kids.
Hopefully in a good way.
Of course in a good way. I want a bumper sticker. I've seen it. I want the bumper sticker that says, if you can read, thank a teacher.
There you go.
You're doing such an important job. And I think sometimes we get overexcited about technology in the classroom to the point where it kind of overwhelms.
It's overkill.
It's overkill.
It really is like a killer sometimes because of like technology. Well, you know, and I get that. And it's been wonderful for me this past year. But my kids are like, I miss the paper and pencil.
Yeah. Truthfully, you know, teaching is so much more than having an iPad in every kid's hands or a Chromebook. It's personal. It's one-to-one. It's a communication between humans. Technology can help it in some interesting ways, But so often technology companies just throw technology at schools. They don't train the teachers. They don't provide.
No, they just go, here you go. Yeah. And in August of 2017, here you go with your Promethean board.
Have fun.
And you better make it work.
Good luck to you. We'll see you on the other side. Yeah, I'm sorry that they put you in that position.
Well, but it's okay because really,
I like it.
Chromebooks have allowed me to actually sit down one-on-one with some of my kids.
Good.
And really help them out.
The kids are growing up in a world that's internet connected, that all this stuff is going on. So, of course, they need to know how to navigate it. And that's part of your job these days as much as reading literacy. Well, good luck. It's nice to talk to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I'm looking I can't believe that they don't have some sort of Google Chromebook interface. What is this? Class flow.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here. We're talking.
Oh, okay.
We're talking, you and me. I had to go to a break.
Oh, but, okay.
But we're still, there's still people listening because we do a podcast too. What's class flow? Oh, that's, okay. So people in the chat room are throwing stuff at me. It looks like, yes, maybe you can use class flow with the Promethean board. And class flow is available for Google Chromebooks. So do you have a Chromebook for the summer to play with?
I do.
Okay. This is the extension you want to put on your Chromebook. It's called ClassFlow.
ClassFlow, F-L-O-W?
Yep. And it looks like you can prepare activities and lessons on it that you'll use then with your Promethean board.
Okay.
You can throw stuff up on your Promethean board. It looks like it has a lot of capabilities. I guess, I didn't find it because it didn't say Promethean. But it is, in fact, compatible. ClassFlow is a well-known kind of lesson, curriculum delivery software.
Oh, and that's kind of nice. So I should maybe talk to my school district about that.
Yes. I would put this on your Chromebook. Take a look at what it'll do. And then you're going
to download that?
Yeah, it's free to download. And then the school eventually will probably have to get an account. But the real question is, this says next generation lesson delivery software for interactive touch boards. So it's specifically for Promethean and other touch boards.
Ooh, that rocks.
So classflow.com to learn more. Thank you, chat room.
Okay.
Classflow.com. And what they're showing is cool. They've got a teacher bringing, presentations up on the class, on the big board. Students interacting with it both on their laptops and Chromebooks and on the board. That looks pretty cool.
And then I have an iPad and I downloaded UPad so I can stand in the back of the classroom.
Yes.
And
yes.
Do my writing and it comes up on my smart board. Am I going to have that capability?
Yes, you are.
Too?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they'd be crazy to make a touch board that didn't do at least that. That's why I likened it to...
It's really amazing because I can move around the classroom. My kids use my iPad to write.
It's nice.
On, and it goes up to the smart board.
So at least you can do that, right?
It's really a great tool.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, that's why I likened it to the overhead projector that you could write on the slide. Except now you just move around. You don't have to stand with the projector.
Do I sound kind of techie?
You sound real techie.
Oh, God, I'm really not.
Well, no, but I love it that you've embraced it. So, I have friends who are teachers. I have one friend in particular, high school teacher, who hates, he at home uses technology. He's super techie and smart. He hates it in the classroom. And he teaches at a one-to-one school, and he makes them close their laptops when they come in the room and not open them till they leave.
I make my kids open them right when they walk in. They're like, oh, no.
Yeah, well, I think they're going to be growing up in a world where they're always in front of that screen anyway. So you might as
well.
This is life, right?
It is life. And boy, have I had to. I've had to reinvent myself.
Good for you.
I'm not even kidding because I thought I can't be old school with these kids that are like new school and they know so much more than I do. I at least have to come up and meet them halfway.
You can do it.
Ugh. It's been challenging.
There's also, Marsworm is giving me a link to Promethean has a forum, a public forum for teachers, where they talk about this stuff, community www.prometheanworld.com.
Oh, my goodness. Let me write that down.
Yeah, and if you go there, we'll put this in the show notes at techguylabs.com as well. But if you go there, they have, I see here's a thread on Chromebook flip chart viewing for students, things like that. So teachers.
What was that site again?
Community, well, prometheanworld.com. And then there's forums at community.prometheanworld.com.
Prometheanworld.com. Yeah. And then I can just follow links. Right?
I would go there, join the forum and say, we're getting one this fall. I have Chromebooks in a one-to-one program. How are you using your Chromebooks with your Promethean screen?
Okay.
And those are people who are going to really have great advice, because one of the great things about teachers, they love to help each other. So they'll be in there saying, yeah, we did this, this is what works, this is what didn't work.
Exactly.
All that.
Yeah. And that's what I want to glean out of all of this, yep. What best works for me and my, now I'm going to have 180 kids this year, so.
Oh, wow.
The 6 periods.
That's right, because you don't just have one class now.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and I'm going to use my Chromebooks every single period. So,
good,
you know,
you.
It's worth it to me to get on top of this before it all comes down to, like, August 8th when we go back to school. So,
well, you know what? You're going to end up mentoring all, you know, your colleagues.
Oh, no, no, I don't know. No.
Oh, you're going to get
so much more than I do.
Well, good. Well, I think by the end of the summer, you're going to be an expert.
So, and then I'll call you back and tell you how it's going.
Will you? That'd be great.
Thank you so much for your time, Leo. You completely rock. You are so amazing. My son, my husband doesn't even understand computers, and we listen to you every weekend.
Oh, thank you, Karen. I really appreciate it. And
thank you.
Thank
Have
you
a
for
great
being
day.
A committed teacher. That's fantastic. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality, GPS systems, self-driving cars, all the cool stuff. This is a toy store. All the cool stuff that technology is bringing us. But I'll be honest, sometimes it doesn't work so well. Sometimes it's frustrating. Sometimes it's challenging. And that's when you call me, the tech guy. That's I'm not merely here to help you. I try to do that. And with the help of the chat room and our vast listening audience, we usually can do that. But more importantly, to give you some moral support for the suffering we're all going through. I played yesterday with a new thing from Facebook. They showed it at their developers conference, F8, a couple of weeks ago. It's called Spaces, Facebook Spaces. It's a virtual reality thing. Facebook owns Oculus, makers of the Oculus Rift. And this Spaces, we wondered when Facebook bought this VR stuff, Oculus. What are you thinking, Facebook? What would you do with this? And I guess we figured, well, maybe they'd want to have some sort of virtual reality social network, you know? And maybe they have other plans as well, but they have released a program for the Oculus Rift called Spaces. It's in the very early days. It's buggy as heck. But it's interesting. And the idea is you and your other friends who own the $1,500 to $2,000 worth of equipment required to run an Oculus Rift, you and your other wealthy friends can be in different spaces, different places in the world, but gather in a virtual world together. And it has a few tools. You can draw. Okay. There's a mirror. You can change your avatar to look sort of like you. I posted some pictures from Facebook because it also has a selfie camera. That's great. First thing I want to do, take selfies. But it is kind of interesting because when you take a selfie of you and your friend, you're in this virtual world. It's kind of wild. So we played with it. My friend Nathan and I got in this Spaces, and you can also show pictures. You could take pictures, but you could show pictures from your Facebook timeline. Hey. So you could say, hey, you know, I just got back from Peru. You want to see my pictures? Yeah. Okay, sure. And and then you could show your pictures together. So Nathan and I if you go to my Facebook page, you can see Nathan Olivares Giles and Leo Laporte. I don't know why I gave myself a gray goatee. I did. doesn't really look like me. For one thing, it's awfully thin. But it was kind of fun. It was kind of interesting. It was more intriguing, more fun than I thought it would be. Some bugs, though, for instance, when you could take a 360-degree picture that you've taken, or if you have one of those cameras, you know, or video, and you could place it in the world so that you guys are in it together. But for some reason, if he placed it in his world, it was in his world normal, but it was upside down for me, which is a little disconcerting to be at the circus together and upside down. But it was interesting. We went to a park together. I have the same reaction basically to this, all virtual reality experiences. They are intriguing at first and fun, but they don't. You wouldn't want to live there yet. It's still very early. Wait a minute, Heather, wait a minute. You're saying that I look like a guy you dated?
Yeah.
The guy, you mean the gray guy with the goatee?
Yeah. Spitting image.
Really?
Yeah.
It's, you if you want, we still have the gear. We could try it if you want. Have you ever tried virtual reality? Is it intrigue you at all?
No.
Yeah. It's kind of weird.
Unless I can virtual reality beat up that icon.
Oh, he was one of those, huh?
Yeah.
One of the bad dates.
Bad.
Bad date. You could, actually. You can. You would get an avatar, and then you could punch me out.
Ooh, that sounds awesome.
We found a use for it. 8888 Ask Leo. Continuing on, Hank in Los Angeles is next. Hi, Hank.
Hi. So I've got a 2007 Infiniti that has Bluetooth, and it's all synced to my iPhone, and you know the Siri works well over it, and I can it'll read directions from Google Maps over the Bluetooth. But what I want to be able to do is play the music over Bluetooth,
and it won't do that.
It won't do that.
That's weird. Usually if you've paired it. So there's two Bluetooth profiles that are used generally when you pair with a car. There's the headset profile, which is what you use to talk on the phone. And it may be that Siri's coming through that, because then sometimes it'll say on your screen, on your car, connected, you know, via the phone connection. And then the secondary connection is an audio connection. And, of course, the audio connection is a higher quality stereo connection using a Bluetooth profile called A2DP. And that's the one you want for music. So I guess it kind of makes sense. Siri would work. It must be working through the headset profile, and you haven't connected the audio profile. Do you see on your Infiniti, do you see an option to connect via an audio device?
Yeah, I mean, there's the phone setup.
Yeah, and in phone, so on my car, actually this worked this way on the last few cars I've had. You pair it with one or the other. It doesn't really matter. And the car will eventually, not always right away, see, oh, this can do audio too. Let's make sure it's an audio, it's audio capable. So you need to make sure the audio is connected as well. I'm not sure where it is on the Infiniti.
It is 2007, so it's, you know.
Oh.
You know.
Oh, it probably doesn't know about audio.
Yeah.
So you're getting Siri via the phone connection as if it's a caller.
Yeah, in fact, even to that, on Google Maps, there's an option in Google Maps on iOS that says, do you want to get directions as a phone call?
That's
why. When you're driving down the road and it's a turn comes up in 1,000 feet and it makes a quick phone call to Bluetooth. Turn right. You know.
If you don't do that, does it work?
Well, I mean, what you're saying is that it's working as a phone call, as a phone only. Audio is.
Yeah, it may be the age of the car, but if you really want to verify that, I would go through the settings and see if there's somewhere you can pick up the phone as a audio device.
Well, I'll check that, but I wanted to see if maybe someone in the chat room or something maybe knows of a flash or some way to upgrade. I know I can put in a new audio unit into the car.
That's a lot. Do you have, does the car have any audio, like an audio jack, or can it take a USB device, like an iPod?
It's old. It's got RCA jacks, which, you know, and I can do that, but it's just, it's a hassle.
You're going to end up doing what a lot of people with cars that are, you know, probably more than 5 or 6 years old do, is you can get a cassette adapter and connect the phone that way.
No cassette.
No cassette. You don't have an aux jack or some other way into the sound system?
Well, you know, it's got, it even has, it has a red, green, red, white, and yellow.
Oh, that's an, okay, that's aux.
RCA.
So you can get a simple cable that'll come from the headphone. Oh, do you have a new iPhone with no headphone jack?
No, it's a 6.
So you can use the headphone jack to plug into that. You can also, this is the least desirable, but it's how I did it for years. You can buy little radio transmitters that plug into your phone and transmit low power over an FM frequency that you can tune to on your radio in your car and get the audio that way. These are all workarounds for older vehicles. Nowadays, of course, there'd be an audio pairing. I'd check to see. I mean, you're right on the edge there, but otherwise, that's what you're going to have to do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. The folks at Quicken Loans, speaking of Detroit, we were talking about how Pittsburgh's really, you know, up and coming now, kind of was like Detroit 20, 30 years ago. Remember Deer Hunter was about how depressed Pittsburgh was? Detroit had been kind of in that situation. The guy who owns Quicken Loans came in. He bought, the Red Wings he bought, or did he buy the Pistons? He bought one of the local teams there. He's revitalizing the downtown. He's created a fund to bring in companies. A lot of technology companies are coming to Detroit. It's turning itself around. And that's thanks to Quicken Loans. I love Quicken Loans. I loved them for that reason alone. And I have to tell you, the next time I'm getting a loan, I'm going to Quicken Loans, not only to support them, but also because they've got this great new product called Rocket Mortgage that is made for people like us, geeks, who want to do everything online. Next time you need a home loan or you want to refi, skip the bank, skip the waiting. Go right to quickenloans.com/techguy and try out Rocket Mortgage. You do it all online. You can submit your pay stubs, your check, whatever paperwork they need. You don't have to go through papers. You just submit it with a touch of a finger. You can. They have a slider that lets you change the interest rate or the term of the loan so you get it just the way you want it. You press go. And within minutes, I'm not talking day. The last time we bought our house 3 years ago, Lisa and I waited a month, more than a month, and to get the mortgage. And they kept asking us for more stuff. It was a bank, not Quicken Loans. I don't know what we were thinking. It was a bank, you know. And if you, I told you the name, you would say, oh, yeah, well, of course. For every day, there was like, oh, and do you have this? Do you have that? Next time, Quicken Loans. Get it done in minutes. You'll have approval. You could do this today at the open house. Go to an open house. Say, I want to buy this house. Just do it just to see. Say, look, I'm approved. Quickenloans.com/techguy. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage, because it's lifting the burden of getting a home loan. Fast, easy, skip the bank, skip the waiting, go completely online. Quickenloans.com/techguy. And we thank Rocket Mortgage for making the Tech Guy podcast possible. 8888 Ask Leo. Thanks to you for joining us. Pat, was that Pat Benatar? Wow. Wow. Whatever happened to Pat Benatar? Is that Love is a Battlefield? I don't remember that beginning. That's how it began, huh? Is she still around? I love Pat Benatar. But she's so, it feels like she's so 80s. Right, Heather? Yeah. You remember her.
Oh, for sure.
For sure.
She does the, I was just starting to type that. She's kind of doing the fair festival circuit. I think she was at Marin County Fair last year.
Oh, I got to go.
Yeah.
Love is a battlefield, baby. 8888 Ask Leo. Benny in Pasadena. Hi, Benny. Whoops. Did I do something wrong? Yeah, I didn't press the button. How about that? Now, how are you doing, Benny?
Hey, Leo. I'm pretty good.
Good.
How you doing?
I'm great. What can I do for you?
Well, I was hoping you can help me spend the money I don't have.
That's pretty hard to do. I'm going to feel guilty if I do it, but go ahead.
I'm looking for an all-in-one printer, specifically cordless, and that it has fax capabilities.
So all-in-ones, the idea is you can print, obviously. Usually it can print in color. It can scan, which means you can scan documents, Or you can copy documents, which is simply a combination of scanning and printing, if you think about it. And some of them have fax machine capability. Obviously, you'd have to plug that into a wall. That wouldn't be wireless. You'd have to plug that into a phone jack. Now, you know our sponsor, Epson, makes some fantastic all-in-ones, and I'm a big fan of them. They make the work. In fact, what I have at home is the Workforce Pro. And they all – now, those are fairly affordable. There's a range, you know, ranging from under – I think even under $100 up to, you know, much more depending on your – you know, how many you have to print. And they also have these new Ecotec printers. We do ads for those. They're a little more expensive because the ink comes with the printer, but it's a lot of ink. It's about 50 cartridges worth. There's no cartridges at all. So that's – economical over the long haul, but more expensive up front. But there are other companies. I mean, those are sponsored, so disclaimer there. But I'm also a big fan of Canon. They make some all-in-ones that are quite good. I always end up getting Epson, to be honest, even before they were a sponsor. I'm just the kind of an Epson guy, always have been, right, going back to those dot matrix printers. How much money do you not have to spend?
Maybe about $100.
Yeah.
A reasonable, or?
Yeah, you can do all-in-ones. It's so here's where they're going to get you. They practically give away, everybody practically gives away printers because they charge so much for the ink.
Yeah.
Right? The ink cartridge.
Yes.
Now, that's not so bad if you don't print a lot, right? Then you got a nice printer, and you can, and if sending faxes doesn't cost you ink. You know, scanning doesn't cost you ink. Only printing costs you ink. So, you know, you get a lot of the benefits for a low cost. And then when it's time to buy a cartridge, then they, you know, they're going to charge you. Ink costs more than blood. Literally. You can buy a transfusion for less. So if what you want is an inexpensive printer, you certainly can do that. I don't know. Let me look and see if the Epson Workforce, if they go as low as that. You know, sometimes what you lose when you buy a Workforce, inexpensive Workforce, is you don't get the fax capability, and that's what you want. Let me see the Epson. And all of these now, by the way, everybody's printers are wireless. They're all Wi-Fi. If you have Wi-Fi in the house, you don't have to connect anything anymore.
Okay.
Yep. So, that would be my first recommendation. If your cost of printing were, you wanted to get that down, you could get a laser printer. Do you need color?
That'd be a nice option to have.
Yeah. So lasers do color, but that's more expensive and not as good. So a number of people are telling me that the Epson Workforce 3460 goes on sale regularly for $119. That's a great printer. The 3620 and 3640 are good. I have, what do I have? I can't remember which Workforce Pro I have, but I love it. I think it's a 3640. And it's just the greatest printer. I've had it for years. Yes, you can get a good, the 3620, you should be able to get for under $100. And that's a great printer. Just remember that you know, the cost of inkjet printing doesn't end when you buy the printer. You then have to pay for cartridges. That's one of the reasons I like this Ecotec that Epson's doing, because you know, the ink is a lot less expensive if you're not buying cartridges. George in Weymouth, Massachusetts. Hello, George.
Hey, Leo, how are you? Listen, I got a little problem. I have a desktop Windows 7 on the desktop, and I often watch YouTube and Netflix on a cable, HDMI cable, to my Samsung, which is in the other room.
Ah.
So here's what happened. Everything has been fine for 2 years. All of a sudden, out of the blue, one night I plug in the HDMI to the Samsung in the other room, and I come back to the computer to start it going, and all of a sudden all my icons are gone. That's number one that happens. Number two, I can't watch Netflix. If I try to watch it on my Samsung, what I end up with, if I'm able to get it started, is a small version of a TV monitor in the left-hand corner. What I did, I looked around. I tried to do some stuff. I pushed the Windows button and the letter P, and I got a couple of options to, you know, duplicate, extend, whatever. Didn't help, though. Can you help me out? What am I doing wrong?
Well, that the icons disappearing does sound like you're looking at the secondary screen, not the primary screen. So you want to be in, if you're doing this, you want to be in mirroring. So the same thing shows up on the TV as on the computer.
Right.
That's the first thing. So make sure you're in mirroring mode.
Mirroring mode?
Mirror, yeah. Okay, so there's two ways you can have multiple screens. One's extended, and that's why your icons disappeared. They're all over on the TV.
Uh-huh.
And because you're using the TV as a second monitor, as an extended monitor. Yeah.
But I don't see them on the TV, actually.
Who knows where they are?
Yeah, who knows where they are?
Just mirror it and see if it works to bring everything back. You want to see the same thing on the computer as you see on the TV.
Which I always did. So I think it was a download that must have been.
Yeah, it could be... Yeah. Couple of things. Of course, Windows is always updating, right?
Yeah. So to get to mirror, Leo, what do I do? Push that button, the Windows button, and the letter P, and then opt for mirror. Is that all fine?
Yeah, yeah. It's in those settings.
Yeah.
It's
alrighty.
Right there. And then as far as why Netflix is small.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why that's small. It could be that Netflix has changed how they work. They could be. Mm. Remember, all of this stuff often is a terrible fear of piracy that all these companies have.
Mm.
And they put copy protection on their stuff. And
I got you.
And maybe that's what's going on.
Yeah, something new. But in any case, my only options are to get to the other screen, duplicate, extend, and project. Projector only. So would it be
duplicate is the same as mirror?
That would be it. Yeah,
yeah.
And it should stay there once I put it on there. Correct.
Well, yeah. Except it didn't, did it? But that's Windows for you. Every once in a while, it might change. It might have changed also because of the cable. Your cable has to be compliant with HDCP. Maybe somebody stepped on it. Maybe something got messed up. Whenever you have trouble with an HDMI cable, especially one like you have, it's a long cable. Might be worth. Just don't spend a lot of money. These are cheap cables. Try in a different one just to see if that solves it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The website's even free, techguylabs.com. Ryan, Pittsburgh, PA. Hello, Ryan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you? How are things in Pittsburgh?
All righty. Well, not too bad.
Good. Pittsburgh's an amazing story of a wonderful. I love Pittsburgh. It's, survived the departure of the steel industry and has become completely revitalized. What a great town.
Well, I'll tell you what, when I was a kid, we were actually, the stats show that we were worse than Detroit is right now as far
right.
as unemployment and
right.
so many other things. And now, you know, Google has a huge presence here, Carnegie Mellon,
it's
some
amazing.
Of the other.
Well, CMU is one of the best tech schools in the country, in the world.
I totally agree.
Yeah, it's really
totally
great.
Totally agree.
Nice
story. I'm going to give you something low tech.
Okay.
At least what I think is low tech. So I don't have any problems working with computers. I'm an IT guy myself. But when it comes to sound, I feel like the village idiot. So here's where I'm at.
Okay.
I have.
We all feel like the village idiot in some respect, right? That's normal. Okay. It's good to know, though. The worst thing is somebody who is the village idiot but doesn't know it.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So here's my setup. I have I actually bought a Roku 50-inch Insignia TV for its pure simplicity.
Yep.
And I have it hooked up to a kind of a lower end, but it's just an Energy Soundbar 1.
Okay.
So essentially, the only thing that's on the back of the soundbar is there's an optical cable
yep.
and there's red and white RCA.
Yep.
Here's my problem. Whenever I hook it up, and typically, I can, for whatever reason, never seem to get the optical to work right. But whenever I just hook it up to the headphone jack on the back of the TV and I pump it through the RCA jacks on the soundbar, the sound always gets out of sync.
Yeah,
and I can't
that's right.
figure it out.
Well, it's normal. That's exactly. There's nothing to tell the sound where it belongs. So, when you play back a stream, the stream has two parts to it. It has a video part, which gets decompressed a little bit slower than the audio part. And over time, if you restart the stream, it'll be in sync, and then over time, it'll get out of sync again. And that's because there's nothing tying the two together. That's kind of a failure, frankly, of streaming technologies that I hope that they solve at some point. The reason why it works if you're using optical, or better yet, if you're using HDMI, do you not have HDMI from your... I guess you don't have an HDMI input on the soundbar, just optical, huh? Optical and analog, yeah. Optical would fix it. I'm not sure why it doesn't always work. if you, if many, for instance, this is so common that most AV receivers have a setting in there to delay the sound. And you just adjust it till it works. And then it's back in sync.
Yeah, the thing that's weird for me is it's like the sound bar will be at a volume of 3 and the TV will be at 90.
Well, you want to turn the TV. You don't want any. Oh, I guess you have to have TV sound because it's the headphones.
Yeah.
Ah, I get it.
Now, and my other question is, I'd looked into things like HDMI ARC, but of course that has to, the audio return channel has to, you have to have an HDMI for it to work.
Right. Right. And ARC wouldn't work with the, well, actually it would work because the Roku's built into the TV, isn't it?
That is correct.
Yeah. But you can't get HDMI into the soundbar is your problem.
Correct.
The only inputs for the soundbar are an analog input or the digital input. And the, and you,
correct.
Yeah.
Now, there's a couple of other settings on there. Like, one of them is called system audio control, and it says, hey, control the volume lever of your AV receiver integrated
is
amplifier.
Is the issue loudness or the issue sync?
It's not sync. It's loudness.
I'm sorry. So, I misunderstood. I was talking about sync.
No.
Oh, it's loudness.
So it's like there are sometimes, if I use the little remote on the soundbar, I only have to have the TV sound like on 10, right? But if they get out of sync, the TV will be on 90, and it's like at 25%.
I see. The what's not in sync is not the lip sync. It's the loudness sync.
Exactly.
Does it get louder over time or quieter over time?
It gets quieter over time. and the crazy thing is, this is what's killing me. The crazy thing is, I like having the Roku TV for the simplicity. You know, I actually, before this, I had a 55-inch Samsung UHD, and while I'd love to tweak it all, my wife and kids were pretty much the whole thing because the thing was so complex.
I got my mom a TCL TV. I think they may make the Insignias. Insignia is the house brand
for
Best Buy. So TCL also has Roku built in. It's exactly why I got it for my mom. It's like, well, I don't need to get you a Roku. It's all built into the smart TV, and it's the Roku is great. So why is the sound... First of all, it shouldn't change. So you're saying you're getting the sound. There's no other output, analog output for sound from the TV.
Nope.
The only way to get it is through the headphone jack. And you plug the headphone jack into the sound bar. You shouldn't actually have to change the sound bar. You should just change the sound on the TV. That should raise it or lower it.
And honestly, that's the whole reason I went with this, because I remember, you know, a while ago, you had talked to somebody else kind of through this, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, why am I killing myself with the optical? I know I have one of these cords laying around. Let me give it a shot.
Well, and I've done that. I mean, much to Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy's dismay, I had a pair of stereo speakers hooked up to my beautiful Kuro TV set via the headphone jack. But I didn't have the problem you're having. It seemed to work.
Yeah.
Why would the sound change over time?
Yeah, the weird thing is I'll go and grab the little, tiny little remote that comes with the sound bar, and I sit there and I can see the little light flashing, and I hear the sound get louder and louder and louder out of it.
You're turning the sound bar up in this case.
Yeah.
Now, of course, when you plug in the headphone jack, that kills the TV speaker. So we're not hearing anything from the TV, right?
Correct.
Only from the sound bar.
Correct.
And there are two ways to change the volume on the sound bar. One is the sound bar itself. That works. The other would be to turn up the TV, and that would raise the volume coming out of the headphone jack. Why don't you turn the TV down and turn the soundbar up and let the soundbar control the sound? Does that work better?
Well, I'll tell you what, even that, I turn the TV off or I switch from, either Netflix or Amazon or my Plex or whatever, and it's just...
The TV should have a sound setting... So if you were listening on headphones, obviously you'd want to turn the volume up on the TV. But if you're using the headphone jack as you are, what you'd like is a fixed level to come out of the TV. You may see a setting in the TV. I would look through the sound settings. It says, look, treat this as line out. Treat this as a fixed setting, not as a headphone jack. But, it's a cheap TV. It may not have those capabilities, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, the only one that it really has on there's something called system audio control. And it says control the volume level of your audio receiver, integrated amp, or using your TV remote. And I'm like, oh, that's great. But then it says you won't hear sound from your TV speakers when both that and CEC is turned on. And then it's like, then if you keep reading, it looks like it only works through the HDMI with the ARC.
I presume you've tried all these silly things, right, just to see what happens.
I'm just.
I would try every setting.
My head at this point.
Yeah. The problem is because you're coming out of the headphone jack. If the TV had some sort of audio out, this wouldn't be a problem. It's because it's coming from the headphone jack.
Should I go trying to play with the optical again?
Yeah, I would. If you could get that optical working, you'd be much better off. And the sound quality would be better as well because it'd be all digital out to the sound bar. The optical is a fixed level. The optical presumes you're going to turn it up with whatever it's going into, the AV receiver or the sound bar. I can only think that's the issue. But I'll tell you what, the chat room's coming up with lots of answers. We'll put them all in the show notes, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Randy in Vista, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Randy.
Yes, hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling. What can I do for you?
So, real quick, I have a production company. We're trying to do live streaming multi-camera, and I have vMix software.
I don't know anybody who would do that.
And I have, you know,
I don't know vMix. I don't know the vMix software. We use TriCasters to do that, which is okay. Kind of a hardware software solution. vMix is software only, or is it? Do you have hardware as well?
It's software only.
Okay, so you use PCs to do this?
Yes.
Cool.
And what I'm trying to do, it'll recognize like USB laptop cameras, but it doesn't recognize my GoPros or my HDMI cameras because the laptop doesn't have an HDMI input.
Right. And of course, if for you to use it that way, the cameras you're using would have to have live HDMI out. Many cameras don't. I don't know if GoPros stream live. I know they'll stream.
I do have a Sony that does.
Okay.
I know.
So, yeah, you'd need live HDMI out. Yeah, that's so there's a couple of ways to do this. I would look at Blackmagic just came out with something that might be exactly what you want to try. It's called the Blackmagic Web Presenter, and it's designed for people who do live streaming. And it will take the inputs from a variety of cameras, and it'll make them appear as a USB webcam.
Perfect.
So it will take HDMI or even SDI, which is, serial digital interface, which is kind of pro grade. I don't know if it would make your GoPro work, but it would work with the Sony for sure.
Okay. Yeah, and I have a Panasonic, too.
Yeah, anything that had live HDMI, that's the key. Not all cameras do, but if it has live HDMI out, it would go into the web presenter, and the web presenter would convert it to USB. Suitable for vMix.
Cool.
Yeah, this is brand new. This thing just came out. It's really for people exactly like you.
And I know they had one that was like over 500 originally.
This is 500 exactly.
Yeah, that's a little too much.
Yeah, not cheap, but you know what? That's because what they're doing takes a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Is there any other kind of processor that'll take an HDMI output and transfer it to USB?
Yeah, I'm sure there is, and I'm sure there are cheaper things. I would go to Monoprice. They're the king of the low-cost device that might do, might do this kind of conversion. The reason, I think it's worth spending the money on the Blackmagic is you're going to get the best, possible quality. And I know a number of people who use the web presenter have been very happy with it. But, yeah, I understand. I mean, this is why you're not building a television studio. It costs, right?
Yeah. What was the other program that you guys use?
We use hardware from a company called Newtek, N-E-W-T-E-K. They make something called the TriCaster. But that's one box and not a cheap box, although I think they make the least expensive TriCaster is a few thousand bucks, that will take multiple cameras into it. And has a switcher and the whole thing. I mean, it's very much a television studio, but it got it very affordable. One of our tech guys here, Burke McQuinn, says there's a good Aja product that does that as well. Aja is very well known for video processing. And apparently, this is interesting. I haven't seen this, but this was, we just got off the NAB show, the National Association of Broadcasters meeting in Vegas, where a lot of this stuff is debuted. That's, I think, where the web presenter from Blackmagic was debuted. Here's something called the Sling Studio at myslingstudio.com. Professional multi-camera production and live video broadcasting made easy. It looks a lot like a TriCaster for a lower price. I love our TriCaster, but I understand that is a hefty price to pay. A lot of people are doing this, though. It's made it possible for churches, for instance, to do live multicam broadcasts of their sermons and their events. For high school football teams, high school baseball teams, college teams, it's really been a revolution. When I was working in TV back in the 90s at Tech TV, it cost $1 million to build a professional broadcast studio. And that was just for the studio, the switcher. And then you had to buy cameras, and those were $20,000 or $30,000. It was very expensive to set up a television broadcast television studio. Fast forward 20 years, and you can set one up for next to nothing. We essentially my podcast network, we call it Twit This Week in Tech, twit.tv if you'd like to see it. We stream better quality video than these million-dollar studios of 20 years ago for, a hundredth of the cost. And we're 24/7. It's like a television station, but it's only on the internet. So you really can do that. We do this show that way. We use consumer-grade camcorders, which are under $1,000 and give us better quality. You know, those Tech TV cameras were standard definition. They were fuzzy compared to the high definition we get from these camcorders. We don't even use the 1080p they're capable of. We do it in 720p. It's just remarkable what you can do. Digital technology has transformed all forms of broadcasting, radio and TV. Mike in Downingtown, PA. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Leo. How you doing? First-time caller. I'm a retired IT guy.
Nice.
Old-time computer programmer, started off with IBM 360 Assembler in 69.
So. Oh, wow. I am not worthy. Nice to meet you.
Well, anyway, being retired, I'm bored. I want to look at trying to get into a business of doing quadcopters and videoing, but I listened to you many times, and you said, don't start off with an expensive one.
Only because you'll lose it. If you're anything like me, I remember the first quadcopter. I got a SYMA, S-Y-M-A. They're cheap, $40 on Amazon. And the first time I used it, I pressed the up button, and it went up. Then I pressed the down button, and it went up. I pressed it again, and it went up. It kept going till I lost sight of it in a little tiny speck in the sky. I never saw it again. So that was $40 anyway, down the tube.
You're
not going to use that for anything except practice, because there is some skits. Have you ever done remote control airplanes or anything like that?
I used to fly control lines years ago when I was a kid, but then I played with radio control. Perfect. My brother was into it in the 70s.
Okay, good. This is so much easier, but that skill will come in handy. Even simple things like, you know, you rudder left to turn right. Those things can, I mean, I can't tell you how many trees I've flown into, hillsides, buildings, people. So, but that's me. You're going to be better at this. And by the way, what a great idea for a business. Remember that if you're doing it for commercial purposes, you have to take a test. The FAA has to give you a license. There are very good ones out there. Most of the pros I know use DJI Phantoms. But those are going to set you back more than $1,000. But there's some very good ones out there. Do it in a field for a while till you really get comfortable with it. You can't really hurt anything that way. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called Twit, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today, and of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.